ABC Local Radio and on ABC Grandstand Digital. Welcome to the press room.
Bowls. You're bowling with a yorker, a screamer.
Your place for cricket talk and cricket news. The press room.
It's not so much the ebbs and flows of Test cricket, but the violent shifts in momentum. Australia sailing along this morning, looking to build a huge total. Dale Steyn out of the South African Test, in hospital, out of the rest of the Tests. And then suddenly the fight back was on.
Steyn is in. Oh, that's cut down to the boundary for four.
Philander into Warner, who drives. He gets this one. Wide of mid-off and away for four. Philander in. Sean Marsh takes this off the toes. He placed it beautifully. Wide of mid-on and away for four. Sean Marsh faces Rabada. He flips this in the air, but away safely through square leg and away for four.
Marsh waits. Steyn bowls, and that's his half century. It's a lovely shot. A cover drive that races away.
Steyn is in again. And
Edge gone. Caught a first slip. Hashim Amla takes the catch. Dale Steyn roars with frustration and delight at the same time.
Khawaja taps away. Rabada is with him. He's bowled him. That's a superb delivery. It cut in. And the off stump is out of the ground. Usman Khawaja, neck and crop. Maharaj around the wicket. Smith is almost beaten. There's a shout for LBW and he's been given. Smith was two strides down the wicket. And he's going to immediately review.
He's not the only one that startled Jerry. I think all of us are. He was almost probably a couple of steps down the wicket.
Here comes the ball tracking. It's taken the very edge of the leg stump. And that comes back as umpire's call. Steve Smith is disgusted. And suddenly Australia is 3 for 168. I'm not sure what to tell you other than the Australian captain has made a duck.
Went away and wrapped on the paddies. Marsh, they go up and he's been given. Sean Marsh on 63.
Grandstand cricket. On ABC Local Radio and on ABC Grandstand Digital.
It's all delivered us to 4 for 181. Australia in reply to South Africa's 242. Gerard Whateley in the press room. Neroli Meadows is the cricket reporter for Fox Sports News. Neroli, that took a turn.
It certainly did, didn't it? I think when we all saw Dale Steyn wincing in pain and we knew the history of that shoulder injury that we thought, well, they're dead and buried now. And then all of a sudden, they're just right back in there. Sean Marsh, what a critical wicket at a critical time.
Ben Horner's the cricket writer from the Daily Telegraph. Ben, welcome to you.
Thanks, Joe.
No shortage of fodder now out of that 2 hours.
No, very interesting. And I think this next session will be fascinating. Adam Voges and Mitchell Marsh have a lot to play for here, and it was made pretty clear before the test match that they need runs to keep their place in the team. So all of a sudden, it's a high-pressure situation for some of these Australian players.
And the assistant editor at ESPN Crick Info is Dan Bredig. Dan, welcome.
Welcome, Jared.
Did we just see the dawn of the DRS umpiring age?
Well, absolutely. You know, Steve Smith's dismissal, that's something where if you go back 10, 15 years, 20 years ago, there's not even an appeal for that. And now it's not only appealed for speculatively, it's appealed for strongly, and the umpire's finger goes up. And I think that is largely because ball tracking has created a very different view of what's possible in the world of LBWs.
Do you think, Ben, that's what the system is designed for? Is that, I mean, at its heart, is that the right verdict for the game?
It's an interesting one. I mean, the way that I guess people always view cricket, they, as Dan said, they wouldn't even expect an appeal to go up for that. And I don't think the wicketkeeper actually went up until it was very late in the piece. But if you want to use the technology, then I guess that's the way you've got to go. You either trust the technology or you don't. And, you know, the way it showed up, he was out.
So I guess there's the technology and then there's the question of umpiring. Is the expectation of the game that Alim Dar is giving that out?
There's some interesting umpiring decisions already, hasn't there? We saw yesterday with David Warner, it was the double from the umpires, the fact that they missed the no ball and then missed the LBW as well to follow. So already we're seeing some interesting calls being made, which is a little sad because otherwise it's been fantastic cricket.
So does that, almost out of obligation, embolden umpires? As Alim Dar gives that out and the game says he's right. So next time around, and this is a highly unusual dismissal, if that becomes the norm, then, as Dirk Nanna says out the back, don't get hit in front.
Exactly. Well, I suppose it's a pointer to batsmen to use their bat, get their bat there and get their pad out of the way. But it's something I think that's evolved on a couple of levels. I think it started in the 90s with umpires like Daryl Hare giving guys out on the front foot, and that was even before DRS, just a more aggressive interpretation of LBW. And I think DRS then heightened and has further enhanced that. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that we're seeing more LBWs, but that will go into the ICC record books as a correct decision, but there's a little bit more ambiguity to it than that, I think.
And Dale Steyn is in hospital. They're short-suited in theory, South Africa, with the fast bowlers, and if they haven't played Mornay Morkel because he's not quite ready, they're going to need to next. What's the intuition and intel on Dale Steyn right now?
Well, there were some reports that he needed a cortisone injection this morning just to get on the field today. You know, he really did amp it up yesterday. He got up around 150, which he hasn't for some time. It looks like a huge blow for the Proteas in terms of this series, but I guess the other bowlers rallied pretty well there. And Paceman down, having gone with the spinner, looked like a problem, but then he's obviously struck back for Smith's wicket there. So, look, I think Mornay Morkel was close to playing. I think he was 90 to 95% fit. So I guess, you know, they'll be confident they can get him up for the next match. But Dale Steyn looks like it might be over for him.
And that's a pity.
It's a massive pity. And I remarked straight away that it's a real shame that we don't get to see Steve Smith up against Dale Steyn, because, of course, that was the entire build-up to this test match, the decapitated snakes and trying to cut off the head of the snake and the rest of the body falls. That's the threat that Dale Steyn said, targeting Steve Smith and David Warner. Of course, he got Warner this morning, but now we won't see that battle. And Steve Smith told me on Fox Sports that he would maybe hiss at Dale Steyn if he got a few runs off him. So I think we've really missed out on some fantastic theatrics throughout the summer. But, I mean, beyond all of the theatrics, it's just a massive blow to South Africa's hopes. And you really have to feel for them because, of course, they lost AB de Villiers before they even got to Australia's shores. So to now lose arguably their second-best player and Mornay Morkel not being entirely fit, it's unfortunate for both South Africa and the Aussie cricket fans who miss out on some really quality players.
So where does it leave this test?
It leaves this test with what I think is a really fascinating contrast when we look at the respective middle orders. You know, South Africa had a very tough start yesterday, and through the class of Quinton de Kock at number 7 in particular, they were able to get themselves up to a competitive total. You now have an Australian middle order which perhaps lacking that kind of class and lacking that kind of confidence, now having to actually put the game ahead for Australia, or to try to. And I think South Africa, even though they've lost Dale Steyn, today is probably the toughest day to bat at the Wacker in terms of how quick the pitch is. I think a couple more wickets after lunch, and South Africa could actually steal a march.
The broader issues as the day started with the New South Wales coroner delivering his findings and recommendations after the inquest into the death of Philip Hughes is, Ben, you covered that inquest in its entirety for the Daily Telegraph. Is how did today's conclusion marry up with what you witnessed and essentially the exoneration of cricket with one or two pointed questions?
Yeah, pretty well, I think, Jared. I think it's how I would have expected it to come. And I think the inquest process was a necessary one, even though it's caused a lot of pain. I think there were questions that needed to be answered and things that needed to be examined. I'm not sure whether the sledging and all that kind of thing needed to be a part of it, but it has been, and I think it was a pretty sensible conclusion that the state coroner has drawn.
Narrowly, you covered Philip's death and those most traumatic days, and especially with the family, and there's no doubt that through the inquest, the difficulty that a family is naturally having, not just with the scenario, but with, I think, the game itself, and I spoke to James Sutherland about this in the lead up to players. There's no doubt that the family holds the game culpable to some degree.
Absolutely, and I think the relationship between the Hughes family and Cricket Australia has been particularly strained, and that's probably a kind way of putting it over the last couple of years. But my thoughts also go out to Cricket Australia, because we put them as a brand, as an, you know, a body that that officiates the game, but really they're human beings. And James Sutherland was close to tears this morning when he was holding his press conference. He deeply cares about the Hughes family as well as, you know, all the cricketers that he takes care of. So I think this has had an enormous impact on the journalists covering it, the Cricket Australia officials, as well as, of course, the players and the family. And there's just no winners out of this. I mean, I think to see cricket exonerated essentially is a good thing for cricket fans, but it's just an incredibly sad story, and nothing will take away the fact that we all miss Philip Hughes desperately.
The coroner took the opportunity, Michael Barnes, to ask a very pointed question of cricket and of the participants in it and how they engage in the game, which has given rise to discussions from some of the most sensible and intelligent people in the game. You'll hear here the coroner, Simon Kadich, and Chris Rogers.
Hopefully, the focus on this unsavoury aspect of the incident may cause those who claim to love the game to reflect upon whether the practice of sledging is worthy of its participants. An outsider is left to wonder why such a beautiful game would need such an ugly underside.
I always believe playing the game, you could play it hard, but you could still play it really fair and let your actions speak louder than any words you say. So I don't believe that it always has to be the case that you have to sledge, but I think there are times where things get heated and opponents, for whatever reason, it is a competitive game, that'll happen. But I think that's when the umpires and the captains have to step in and make sure that it doesn't go too far.
I don't necessarily think you should outlaw sledging as such. I mean, there's still, it's part of the game. It's played over such a long period of time, and there's so much downtime that it naturally happens. But you've got to do it in the right way. And umpires need to be policing that a lot, I think. You know, still words will be said to unsettle the batsman, but you do it in the right manner. And we've all seen sledging that's just way over the top, haven't we, Caddo? And then you start to think, well, that's just pointless. And that is, I think, what the coroner is referring to.
It's a vexed conversation. It's clearly viewed differently from those inside and participants of the game. And then, as the coroner identified himself as an observer of cricket. Dan, what have you made of today's discussions?
Absolutely. Well, I don't think it's far from the first time and far from the last time we'll be having this discussion. I think, obviously, around the context of Philip Hughes' death, it has heightened everything. It heightens all the discussions we're having around all of the issues that feed into this awful, awful event. That being said, I agree, actually, with Chris's point that it's a game played over a long period of time. It's not a game of footy where you're out there for a couple of hours. It's probably the game where there's maybe a little bit of a parallel there in terms of the time spent and the relationship between the players is the game of golf. Except, you know, cricket is more adversarial even than that. So the concept of trying to force players to I suppose, rein in their aggressive tendencies over the course of a five-day match. I think that's maybe a little bit too long a bow to draw.
Ben, are you writing about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that players will naturally change the way that they might sledge opponents based on the tragedy that we've seen. I mean, I think some of the things that were alleged to have been said in the inquest, I mean, I don't think we'd be finding many fast bowlers saying that anymore because the circumstances have changed so much. So I'm not sure a whole lot needs to be done because the game is just played in a different context now by these players, and I think it's part of the competitiveness of the game. I don't think you can take that away, and also it's part of the entertainment of the game. I mean, people enjoy the personal conflict out on the field, and you know, I think it's part of the tapestry of the game.
More than that, it's part of Australian culture. We all have banter with each other in the media boxes. We're walking down the hallways. That's the way we do things here, and banter has always been a part of that. There's a difference between nastiness and banter, and I think a good barometer is if you were scared that a stump mic would pick it up and people would hear it at home and your family and friends would hear it at home and you were ashamed by it, then don't say it in the first place. That's how I feel about it. But some of the great stories and some of the great battles come back to people saying a clever line to one person and the retort that comes with it, and we love that. That's part of the game, as you say.
The additional part of the finding, Dan, that you were exploring was the ambiguity regarding what constituted a bouncer threatening and intimidatory bowling, which the coroner has posed to Cricket Australia to tighten up, essentially, to look at its laws and to look at its playing conditions. And the implications of that are actually far broader than just the Sheffield Shield and just Cricket Australia. Have you made ground on that in the past couple of hours?
Yeah, well, I think the understanding that is going to grow in over the course of the afternoon and days beyond is that this is going to have to be quite a multifaceted process involving a lot of people. It's important to observe that really the starting point of this is Simon Taufel speaking at the inquest, being a highly respected former umpire and being the ICC umpire's training manager, essentially the guy who lays down the ground rules for umpires adjudicating games worldwide. Now, if he is not comfortable in terms of the interpretation of the bouncer when he was asked to make an analysis of how many short balls Philip Hughes faced, then that tells us that there needs to be a conversation about this, and it can't just happen in Australia. It's got to happen globally at ICC level and also the MCC, the traditional custodians of the game at Lords. And I'm sure you'll see some movement on that relatively quickly.
The other story of the day was James Sutherland imparted to us that the new stadium, which is just magnificent on the horizon in our view from the Wacker, is slated to host the Ashes Test next summer.
So the practical completion date is 1st of October. That is well ahead of when we plan to hold an Ashes Test match here in Perth. So that in itself gives me cause for optimism. In February, March of this coming year, 2017, the grass will be fully laid in the stadium. So those sort of things are things that give, again, further cause for optimism. And we would like to think that the first ever sporting event at this new Perth Stadium can be an Ashes Test match.
As a native West Australian, Neralee, what do you think?
Oh, look, I love the Wacker. I love the Wacker. I'll never stop loving the Wacker. I was a young country West Aussie kid that would come up and, you know, watch cricket here and sit on the grass and love the entire thing. But at some point in time, we have to move on and we have to keep up with the fact that Perth is a growing city and it's a lot bigger than it was when I was a kid. So, look, we're moving there. It's happening. Hopefully they get the wicket right, because I think the drop-in wicket, that's the main thing that everyone's really concerned about, is the fact that it just won't have any liveliness to it. And we're losing another, you know, boutique, much-loved ground from the international cricketing calendar, and I think that's a bit of a sad thing.
Neralee, Ben, Dan, thanks for your participation in the press room. We've got a special guest, one of the most popular cricketers of recent times, without question, and he's been an institution here as well. He's with Clint Wheeldon, Brad Hogg.
He is indeed, Jared. Speak about one of the most popular people in cricket. All he's done is sign autographs while he's trying to have a meal down here. Brad Hogg, welcome along.
Thanks, Clint. I hope you're looking after the two other West Australians up there, Bucky Rogers and Simon Caddish. Yeah.
Oh, as you heard Neralee Meadows before, it is a bit of a WA-a-thon here at Grandstand Test Cricket. Firstly, get your thoughts on how you've seen proceedings today and yesterday. Terrific day of cricket yesterday and a really enthralling game set out in front of us now.
Yeah, I was surprised that the wicket was so quick, considering the weather over in WA over the last couple of months. I thought it was going to be a little bit tacky, and I thought there was going to be a little bit more purchase for the spinners, but it's not meant to be. It's been a pace attack, and great to see Mitchell Starc come back yesterday and show what he's really worth. And we really did miss both him and Hazelwood over in South Africa just recently. But at the other side of the coin there, you've got opportunities for the younger players coming through. But all in all, I'm very disappointed that Dale Steyn's got a shoulder injury. That you want a close contest. You still want Australia to win. You want your home team to win. But you want to see a close contest. You want to see a good battle between bat and ball. So that could really cost South Africa at the end here.
You're a person who loves his cricket, and you're going around again in the Big Bash. You're still playing grade cricket. How does the body hold up after all these decades? How old are you now?
45. Look, the body's holding up really well. I've rang up Jock Campbell, who was the fitness consultant for Australian cricket when I was around 2003, 2005, and I needed to get more pace into my legs. So we've worked on that, and it's I'm a little bit quicker across the ground. When it's not cold, when it's warm. But, the weaknesses that I had last year, I've worked on them. And the bowling side of things is coming out really well. I'm happy with the way it is out grade cricket at the moment, and really enjoying my grade cricket. It's great to be down there with Willerton again. And, just playing cricket, the game that I've loved, the game that's given me so much.
Somewhat controversially, it has to be said, in terms of a decision to go across and sign with Melbourne, the Renegades in the Big Bash League, and yet you're welcome back in here to the Wacker, which is a nice thing. How did that all come about?
Well, it's been reported throughout the papers during that particular period. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's another opportunity. I was just sitting there watching Ashton Agar play for Australia over in India in that T20 competition, and he's not doing that job for the Perth Scorchers. So it was time for me to move on one way or the other, and I still wanted to play. And just it's great that I've got an opportunity over East. It's something that I've been asked to do a number of times throughout my whole career, but I've never taken it. I've tried to be a West Australian loyal player through and through, but it was just an opportunity that I couldn't knock back, especially with life moving after cricket. You want to experience everything that you can, and to be able to go and play in the home of sport, Melbourne, whether it's 1 year, 3 years, God knows how many years, it's just a great opportunity. So you're playing with players that were probably the hardest when you went into battle to play against. So, yeah, it's a great rivalry. It's turned right around to something special now.
Everyone seems to be having a book out at the moment. You've got a book out as well. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of books going out there.
Is yours as controversial as some of the others we've seen?
Yeah, well, there's a character in there that is really hated for a bit. That's myself. So, like, at the end of the day, there's a couple of stories that do involve other players there, but the intention's not to put those other players down. It's really to show my vulnerabilities and the differences in personalities and how you have to adapt in such an environment. And to go back through your whole life is something daunting, but it was great. And it was, at the end of the day, when I got asked to write the book, I thought, well, what do people want to know? I don't want to talk about what people see on TV or what they've seen me do out in the middle. I want to give them a bit of information what I'm really like behind closed doors. And I go and speak to school kids and talk to them about resilience, and I really open up to them. So I thought, well, if I open up to them, why not open up to the whole world? So, it's been a great experience, and there's a lot of fun in the book, but there's also a lot of drama in there as well. So I've tried to mix it up with a bit of both, so you get whacked with a bit of a laugh, and then all of a sudden you get hit with a brick wall coming at you. So hopefully the people that do buy it, they enjoy it and get something out of it.
Brad Hogg is our special guest on Grandstand Test Cricket, former Australian Test player himself and still rolling around in the Big Bash. You speak about being hit by a brick wall. One of the stories that does hit everyone with a brick wall when they read it is your very frank admission, and we know how important men's mental health is, but your frank admission that after going through a very dark patch you actually considered maybe ending it all. It was startling to read that from someone we know like yourself, who is so bubbly, energetic, that you would, like so many men do, go through such a challenging time yourself.
Yeah, it was one of those periods where you're going through a bit of a divorce, and also you gave up a career that you really loved, and you had an opportunity to play Test cricket, and I gave that opportunity up to try and save a marriage, and then all of a sudden it just all fell apart. And you sort of sit there and you've got your kids. There's an opportunity that you're not going to see your kids as much, and what role do you play as a father with that? And there's so many men that go through that. And also, on the flip side, there's a lot of women that go through this too in that scenario. So let's not just make it a man's thing. It's women as well that go through tough situations in these tough times of divorce. But then you sort of look at the financial side of things. You've set yourself up with the career that you only know. Fair enough, I come back from a farm, but the farm wasn't there anymore. Mum and Dad sold that up, so I really had nowhere to go. I had a degree in accounting and marketing, and it was just seemed all daunting at that stage. But at the end of the day, it was just one night where I sort of went out and had a fairly big night, had an argument with the cabbie, and then had an argument with my mum and dad, and got home and had a whiteboard and just wrote up on the whiteboard where I wanted to head. And it was amazing. The next week, I met my future wife, and things moved on from there.
Really appreciate everything you've done. It's been outstanding, the fact that you've been so frank and open and honest with your book, and great to see you, even though you won't be wearing that very outstanding orange uniform throughout the Big Bash League. Thanks very much for talking to us, Brad Hogg.
More from the Whacker shortly.